Hey, hello there, Patreon listeners. You lucky bastards. What a day this will be. Hello, I'm Henry Zebrowski. I'm alone. I have no Ben Kissel here. So I got nobody to weigh down this interview. It's just my thoughts against this other man's thoughts. And I'm excited for our thoughts to collide, slide into each other, and eventually make little children thoughts. But I also, how many times have I said this? Abortion should be mandatory. So we might have to get rid of some of these child thoughts simply so that they don't. I don't know, man. We're here already. I've already said abortion. We're 30 seconds in. Welcome to the interview. This is the director of one of my favorite films of 2020. It was a light spot in a dark year. And we're excited to have you, Stephen Kostanski, the director of Psycho Goreman.
Hi, thanks for having me. Let's make some babies. Like
why? Well, let's have our thought children. I started as a fan of BioCop, but I'll tell you what, which is really funny because I think that it might happen quite a bit to horror directors, where I first learned of BioCop from a shirt from Atomic Cotton.
Oh yeah, it's a great shirt. One of my favorite shirts. That's
why
been
am I work. Alive?
It's such a great idea to do a glow in the dark shirt of BioCop. It's perfect.
It's so good. I just want to ask, first of all, if you're listening to this, stop the interview and go watch BioCop. It's like 5.5 minutes long.
I should also point out, I don't even know where it's available online. Like
it's on YouTube. Unfortunately, it's now like they've pirated it. It's gone. It's okay. Free.
Well, that's fine. As long as there's a place for people to watch it. Because, I mean, typically it's attached to my feature film, Manborg, as like an extra on the DVD.
That's right. Manborg also is that also rules.
Oh, thank you. But yeah, BioCop, I guess it's on YouTube. I think there was like a German dub. Just search it. I'm sure it'll pop up somewhere.
Can I ask the dumb shit question up top of like, so where did BioCop come from? Because I know you started in makeup and special effects, right?
Yeah, well, started and I'm still doing. That's literally what I was doing this afternoon before this interview. I'm over at Masters Effects Toronto right now working on jumping back and forth between The Boys Season 3 and Umbrella Academy Season 3 doing effects and stuff.
You see our buddy, friend of the show, Jack Quaid, say hello.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I don't want to say anything, but I got to work with him on some stuff on this season. So
when we were interviewing him earlier this year, talking about being covered in blood and how it's a trial. And it's like I did a show where I was fully body painted and had prosthetics all over me 24 hours a day for months at a time. Oh, and it does become harrowing. But as an actor, it's very freeing.
Yeah, I mean, it definitely takes a certain kind of person to do the full prosthetics thing. You got to have the right personality for it. And I do admire actors who can do kind of anything in that sphere. Like I love anybody that can get covered in blood, get like gore gags attached to them, who could just be in that world and enjoy it, because there's a lot of actors who really don't. And it makes my job very difficult.
Because they just don't understand is that it's so much fun. It's the actual, for me, in that type of scenario, like the idea of like having a full facial prosthetic, so when I look in the mirror, I don't see me anymore. I think it goes back to the sort of the real elemental version of play that acting can be.
It is like the only kind of acting that I enjoy doing too. Like I don't like being on camera, but if I've got like a full creature suit on or like robot suit or whatever, like I play a bunch of characters in Psycho Goreman and Manborg, and I'm in The Void briefly as like one of the cultists. Like I love getting in there if I know my face is covered, and there's a certain kind of like freeness to that you don't get when you're like, you know, exposed to the world.
Because you know what, everybody, you know, like, yeah, I like a mumblecore movie every once in a while. Like, I understand, like, people need films that are about, like, a brother and a sister quietly talking, like, that kind of shit. But for me, the magic of movies is you get to be an alien every once in a while.
Oh, totally. Well, it's variety. If you had to be an alien every day for, like, 20 years, you'd probably get sick of it. But if you get to be an alien one day and then like some kind of slasher killer the next day, and then like, you know, blown up in a war scene the other day. Like that to me is like the best life you can ask for, is just being in every kind of story.
It's so cool because, yeah, I imagine the guy who played Ferengi must have wanted to commit suicide at some point. Like, you just have that hat on because it's just a hat that wraps around your whole head. You have, like, you just see eyeballs, nose, and mouth, and that is all that is free.
Oh, yeah, having to wear all that head low for Star Trek, I imagine, gets tiring. But that speaks more to just the process of TV, I think, whereas probably being a Ferengi in a Star Trek movie is fun because you do it for a few days and... You know, it ends eventually. But if it's a show where it's like, oh, we're going 7 seasons, I think you'd get sick of it pretty quick.
That's pretty sweet, though. So I want to talk about BioCop first, because BioCop is fucking hilarious. And it's the concept of a cop brought back to life who got caught in a scientific experiment, who's now desperate to die and can't. He's like forced to be a superhero is fantastic.
It's such an absurd idea, and I have to give credit to my effects artist friend who's kind of come up through the industry with me over the past decade, Michael Walsh. It was me and him were working late one night on this sci-fi show called Defiance. I don't know if you remember that show. It had a tie-in video game. It lasted four seasons. Anyways, good. Michael and I were working at Paul Jones Effects, and we're making this character called Bioman. Anyways, we're working, making molds and just doing like crappy lab effects work. And we're just riffing we just blurted out BioCop just out of nowhere and just started riffing on this idea of like, well, what would BioCop even be? And I think that same day we'd been talking about that part in The Fly 2 where the guy gets sprayed in the face with the like fly acid and he's like pulling his face off and screaming.
And
we were joking about like, well, what if there was a character where like that was just their whole life? was that like 1 second of agony was every minute of their day? And so then we just started throwing this character into like cop scenarios, like very mundane scenarios, like pulling someone over for a traffic ticket, but they're just in the worst agony.
Please let me die. Yeah. And I love when he absorbs his partner. Like, he's just constantly bleeding and screaming at people, throwing up acid. It's so much fun. And also, it's like such a centered SFX idea.
Yes. It's very incredible Melting Man. Like, it's just your whole concept is centered around a thing that's just a constant effect, which is my favorite kind of thing, because being somebody that's, you know, visually creative and wants to make monsters and robots all day long, like the idea of having something centered around a character like that, that's also constantly evolving, like that, it's with BioCop, it's fun to mess with his mythology and come up with all the weird stuff that he can do randomly. Like, yeah, like absorbing his partner. There's almost like a Lovecraftian level of like mythology to this character. And I love that people just, in the world of the BioCop movies and even in Psycho Gorman, it's like people are just oblivious to it and they don't care, which to me is like the worst pain which is worse than not being able to die is the fact that nobody gives a shit. And it's like, we should give that man a badge and get him out there.
He's just the pawn of the system. He's just sort of used by everyone, which I think is really funny. And then people attach emotions to him and they act as if they're having whole conversations. But then his whole thing is just being like, why am I still alive? Which is my favorite statement.
But at the same time, he has brief flashes of like positivity, which is my favorite.
Yeah.
Like it's like when he gets the sunglasses on and like gives the thumbs up. It's why is he happy for that moment? Like he's just a total enigma of a character. And that's what I love about him. He's just a tornado of nonsense that like you can't track. You can't predict what he's going to do. And that to me is like the most fun kind of character to have in a movie.
Did BioCop lead to Manborg? Like, how did you go from doing the short to the movie? Was it one of those things where you learned from making the short? Like, were you always wanting to be a director? Or special effects?
I started out doing stop motion animation, like in my dad's workshop. He loaned me a Super 8 camera when I was 12. And so every summer I would just do these little like stop motion frame by frame animations with clay figures. And that's when I got obsessed with the power of storytelling in film. And I wanted to continue that. And like, it eventually advanced to doing live action stuff with my friends. But in like working with clay and in stop motion, it was like anything I wanted. So it was always like monsters and fantastical things. And so that carried into live action. It's like, I didn't want to just have like two characters on a park bench talking. I wanted action. I wanted spectacle. I wanted creatures and like fantasy stuff. And so that's when I started learning prosthetic effects. So I started making short films and things and submitting them to film festivals. And so like a few years after that, I met the rest of the guys from Master on Six, Matt and Connor and Adam and Jeremy. And we all started working together. We formed Astro on Six as like a little collective of filmmakers. And
it's like a sketch group essentially, but just filmmakers. Like you guys just making like a collab, which I honestly think really helps, because I think the age of the auteur is dying. Because to be an auteur, I think a lot of times you have to be sort of like a visionary or like a dictator.
Yeah.
Well, and that's not how movies work.
Yeah. Filmmaking is very collaborative. And for me, it was tough becoming collaborative, coming from stop motion.
All animators are used to total control. When I shift doing a live action show for Adult Swim and like all of my bosses, whom I loved and became mentors, they are animators first. So they look at you as a human, thinking that you can do the things a cartoon can do. Oh, and you're like, no, though, but I'm still a man with a body and a mind.
Yeah, well, I have that same problem to this day where I will go up to actors and like puppeteer them as though they're a stop motion armature. And like, I'll take their head and like turn it slightly and be like, and that's the shot I want. There we go. So
that's what Wes Anderson does.
And I mean, I've kind of just embraced that's my weird, that's my technique, I guess. But with Astro on Six, the best thing about those guys is that like, we were such a fun group of friends that were all so different and like definitely clashed on stuff, but also, I don't know, there's just like a real genuine camaraderie and friendship there that brought me out of my shell a lot too. And it showed me like, oh, working with other people can be super fun. Like making something like Laser Ghost 2 is like the most fun I've ever had in my life, because I come up with all the weird sci-fi fantasy stuff that I like, but then I throw those guys into it and I'm like, okay, now you guys make it like super funny and charming. Like,
yes,
here's some shitty laser guns and some Ghostbusters jumpsuits. Like now just go and riff and let's see what happens. And so that taught me that there is a real benefit to collaboration, and it just enhances what you're making. Like it just improves everything you're doing.
I think there are people that when it starts, because like it works great with Biopic Cop because Biopic Cop's 5 minutes long. So you can do it. It can be a little bit more sketchy. But I think you really could see the progression in your films, how you really do get better at telling story. And then I'm one of those. I'm with you, man. Like I like movies for the most part if they are just entertaining to look at quite a bit. Like have funny set pieces, like I in fun and good, interesting dynamic set pieces. Like I am like, you know, I we were talking about this today. I was talking about with my wife about the movie Things was just played by The Last Drive-In. I was like, I like that movie better than I liked Phantom Thread.
Yeah. I mean, I forced my girlfriend to watch Things over the weekend. And I guess I just have like, it's an intuitive enjoyment of movies where it's like more emotional. And to me, that is more just about the tone that a movie creates, like through just music and spectacle. Like I just love the way certain movies wash over me. And it's not so much an intellectual thing where I'm like, let's dissect like what this scene means. It's more just about how it makes me feel in the moment. And that's like, it definitely is tough to approach movies in that fashion and then also want to make them.
Yes.
Wanting to just like whatever popped into my head, that's what I would go shoot. And you can do, if you're sitting in your corner animating, like that's one thing. But if you're working with a team, you have to have a plan, because making movies is like legitimate work, and working with a team, you have to communicate. So that was a big learning curve for me. And I'm still learning, and it's
I don't think that ever stops. Tough. I think that it's a constant thing, because you have to figure out how to. The director seems to be one job is to dictate the vision and talk and translate it to everybody else, because you can really see it, like, you know, classically Troll 2, right?
Yeah.
Where the actual physical lack of communication. The fact that the crew was all Italian and they could not speak English well enough to understand shows why the movie, while it is entertaining, is also kind of a schizophrenic mess.
Yeah. Well, and like, it's tough because I also genuinely love movies like that.
Me too.
Like, I'm such a huge fan of weird misfires. Like, one of my favorites is Highlander 2, which is a movie that is a, like, garbage, awful movie. Like, it's a total mess, but it's such beautiful imagery. And, like, the idea is so bonkers that I just love, like, just being in it, like, in that kind of bombastic spectacle where it's, like, so passionately wrong. That
it's audacious. It takes the chance of survival. Like, it literally, like, this movie somehow, like, lives.
Yeah, yeah. I love it when they take that big swing. And even if it's a miss, like, I just love that they went for it. Because that, to me, is way better than somebody being like, I'm going to make a real subtle, sedate thing and, like, play it safe. Like, I don't like people playing it safe and just slotting their movie into whatever is hot in the moment and just making, like, making that thing that was successful again, but slightly different. Like, that bugs me. Whereas I want stuff that's, like, weird and off the wall and makes me go, like, oh geez, like, that was like a slap in the face almost. It was so, like, counter to what I'm used to a movie being. So,
but
yeah,
that's what I think Psycho Gorman, honestly, dude, does so well. Is it, to me, it's such a great touch points of the story is genuinely funny and interesting. Like, it is, the kids are, I believe the kids, the parents are hilarious in their own world. I also believe the logic of PG. Like, I believe his world, like, it is weirdly grounded, but it's also fucking great and violent.
Yeah, I mean, it's juggling a lot of stuff, that movie, but it's like, it's a pretty good distillation of all of my sensibilities.
Is Crazy Ball Calvin Ball?
Is basically Calvin Ball, yes.
Yeah, yeah. I was, you know, it's like, that was the first thing. It's so funny. I was like, that's Calvin Ball. Because we talk about it. Joe Bob Briggs just brought this up recently about how modern filmmakers are way more about the idea of, like, you could see way more people showing their like, nods to what inspired them.
Yeah. Well, I feel like it's almost like writing an essay where you kind of need to, like, cite your sources before you can move a thing forward. Because I find it's way worse to, like, pretend like you exist in a vacuum and other things don't exist. And
yes.
And I mean, it's not to say that that doesn't work and, like, filmmakers haven't pulled that off. But to me, it's like, I want to, like, give some acknowledgement and respect to the stuff that got me this passionate about movies in the first place. But then I also want to take everything a step further. Like I treat all that stuff as, like, that's like the spark. And then the actual fire is, like, what I build around it, you know?
Absolutely. Yeah, like, Scorsese talks about the battleship Potemkin, but you talk about Troll 2. You know what I mean? It's, but the same, it's still there, right? Like, it's the same lineage where it's like people do. The only thing, I think the only person that truly lives in a universe of his own is David Lynch.
Yes. Oh, I 100% agree with that. But it's,
he
it's
sees just the edges of it. We don't.
But it's, I think, regardless of whether it's like, Lynch or Scorsese, it's like, it's just everybody, like, just has their own language of what their, like, what their film speak is, like, what, how their movie speaks to the audience. And you build that language on movies, on what you were brought up on and what kind of, like, has turned you into a filmmaker in the first place. And everybody kind of comes from a different place and has different influences and different things that just subconsciously are always there. Like, I feel like I'm making references to stuff without even knowing it. Like, there's stuff, I can't remember offhand exactly what, but there's stuff in PG that people brought up were like, oh, is that, like, kind of like that one movie? And I'm like, oh, I guess it is.
It got in there, right? Yeah. Like, honestly, it somehow it slipped in and it went into my hands and eyeballs and way I saw it again in this movie.
And again, going back to, like, intuitive film enjoyment, and it's also intuitive filmmaking. It's like trusting my gut is, I think, often informed by what my instincts just know is right. And my instincts are informed by you know, decades of watching schlocky Full Moon and Empire Pictures movies.
I talk about for myself, right? If I what I view as me doing a good job as a comedian is me getting out of my own way and getting in the quote unquote zone and trying to trust myself that I know what is funny. I know what's that's going to come out of my mouth is going to be useful or how to move on that type of thing. Do you feel like that it was the transgression? It was the progression of doing these movies that like you really begin to feel that assurity, like knowing that like, oh, this is like, I like that idea, that intuitiveness.
I think it definitely comes from my past films. Like PG is definitely a product of everything I've made up to this point because each experience was so different than the other. Like Manborg was such a like just no budget garage movie, like an ambitious thing that I did not have the resources to do. And it was as close to just making a movie on my own as possible. So like that movie, I think if PG is closest to any of my other filmography, it's probably Manborg.
They're very like similar. DNA wise, you could see it. But then I kind of want to almost ask being like, but The Void is like kind of a stripped down, even though you do up, there is elements in it. But I mean, it's obviously nowhere near Manborg or PG in terms of spectacle. Like, did you feel like, was that like a movie that you pitched because you thought it would be easier to make? Like you thought that would be easier to pitch or?
It was a collaboration between me and Jeremy Gillespie, and his tastes and sensibilities, while we definitely have a lot of crossover, I think overall are very different from mine, where he's way more subtle and understated and well-composed. And I'm way more like slapdash cowboy.
Yeah.
Like kind of like fly by the seat of your pants filmmaking.
Yeah.
And so those two things mashed together are what made The Void what it is. And it was honestly, it was a frustrating experience, I think, for both of us, just trying to get that movie made for a multitude of reasons. But making that movie did show me that, like, maybe that type of movie isn't something I want to always be making. I need variety.
Like it's very traditional, kind of like a grindhousey cult horror movie.
Yeah, it's a very like straightforward horror film compared to the rest of my filmography or even Astron 6's filmography. Like it's a very like point A to B story, even though it does get totally bonkers.
It's great like, though. I love The Void. And it got a lot of play.
Oh yeah. Well, that's what's I'm so happy about with the movie is that it seems like it gained its life after its release. Like when we first put it out, we were both a little disappointed with the response. It seemed like people were expecting a Manborg or a Father's Day, and instead they got like a legitimate horror movie. Because the goal, like Jeremy and I agreed from the top, that we wanted to make a movie that was actually scary, like make a creature feature that was scary.
Scary's hard, man. Like we even been talking about it ourselves, like because in terms of doing last podcast and left, we have nothing but like scary things to draw upon. But making something truly tense, truly terrifying is something that's a whole other thought process. I think it's like making music or making like the people that can think in music, thinking in horror is very specific.
Well, and also you break out of that for 1 second and the whole illusion crumbles, which is a very scary thing making that film, because then suddenly making effects for it as well, it became like, well, this has to be convincing. And so, your brain, the way you think about the project changes completely, because you know that like if the illusion is broken in any way, in any department, then the whole thing doesn't work. And so, it was a really tough project, and it was hard to like get it anywhere near what we envisioned it being for like a multitude of factors. But at the same time, I'm very proud of what we accomplished with it. Jeremy's like design work on the movie, like the triangle imagery.
It was gorgeous.
So bold. And like, I feel like it's even now, like people still talk about it and they talk about the cultists, and like, I got to give all the credit to Jer on that. Like just figuring out that kind of that, the like visual style of the movie is so much of like what the personality and the identity of the movie is. And so I yeah, I think despite all the horrible shit we went through to get it made, like, I'm very proud of it and of the work we did on it.
I'll say, though, in terms of reaction, the idea of like not breaking the universe, and because then you ruin the movie. I'm one of those people, and I've been stared at in movie theaters before. But when things are really scary or like a big kill comes, they make me laugh. And it's not really out of uncomfortability. I think some people say it's because you're comfortable, you don't want to sit in silence. It's like, it's the opposite. It's like, I'm genuinely delighted when I see something that's very scary.
Well, I always think back to when I saw the remake of The Ring in theaters.
Yes.
And there's that big scare early on when the closet door opens. So nobody in the theater saw that coming.
I remember that feeling, dude. The audience, like, jump.
They jump. But what's great is everybody screamed and jumped and then started laughing and kind of like talking amongst themselves, like, oh my God, I can't believe that happened. Like, and also just this like kind of communal kind of like celebration of like, oh my God, that got everybody in the theater is just like, it's such an electric feeling. It's so good.
I just missed seeing, I just saw The Conjuring 3 in theaters. It's like, which is, it's good. It's fine. You know what I mean? Like, their view of Satanists is hilarious. Because there's nighttime and daytime Satanists. I don't know if you know.
I was not aware of that. Nighttime, I didn't know they differentiated.
Oh, no, there is. And nighttime Satanists are far more active. The problem with Conjuring 3, it's become like a Christian superhero franchise.
I noticed a lot of reviews pointing that out, which is why I'm not really chasing it down. It seems like, I don't know.
The thing is, really, but my thing, I just miss that experience in a theater so much. Like, I really can't wait to get back to seeing really scary movies in the theater, because The Dark and the Wicked this year, The Dark and the Wicked and The Lodge and Host were all three of like the, like, I probably put them towards the scariest films I saw last year. And I was like, man, I miss being in a theater just like cackling as like, I just was thinking Hereditary when she does a when she's fucking cutting her throat. I was just screaming with laughter, and I miss it so much. Yeah,
I was going to bring up Hereditary, because both that and Midsommar, I enjoyed those experiences, not just as like watching a horror movie and just loving it and being taken on this crazy ride, but also just watching people in the theater like kind of get upset with it not being the experience they wanted it to be. Like, they, you could tell that they wanted a Conjuring movie, and what they got was like something way darker and like harder to digest. So I love that uncomfortableness in a theater where you tell people like aren't into it. And it just makes me enjoy it more.
When you see someone's like night's ruined by the thing that you're watching, you love it. Like, I'm sitting there and you're watching and people were fucked up. But it's like, with my wife is always responds much harder to the emotional content. That's also what Hereditary and Midsommar fucking nails, because like Toni Collette having the breakdown at dinner is technically the scariest scene, the most like upsetting scene in the whole movie.
Oh, there's a few scenes I would list as being the most upsetting. I feel like the son going, like driving home and going to bed and laying in bed and listening to his mom scream, like freaking out, is like the most horrifying thing imaginable.
It was wild, dude. But what I appreciate is that Psycho Goreman, because I do believe a perfect film has moments of some levity. Like, I love a dirge of a horror movie, but my favorite horror movies have at least acknowledgments of humanity and character within them, that kind of like you have this like momentary break, like the audience like has that like relieved titter, and then you go back,
because the humor makes you like the person, you like the person, you care about what's going to happen to them. If you care and you don't want them to die, it just makes the horror stuff more intense,
so much more powerful, because you give a shit, like, and because you're watching real people. That's just one of those things where I was like looking at the difference between Prometheus and Alien, right? Or in the idea that like the beginning of Alien is this incredible ensemble that you fall in love with these characters at the very top of Alien, and in Prometheus it felt sort of like an echo, like kind of an emptier version of what he tried to, what he was like trying to do, what he did with Alien.
Yeah, you could feel the effort there, but I don't know, the best stuff feels effortless to me. Alien, the character work in Alien feels effortless because it just feels like you're watching real people dealing with real problems, like talking about the bonus situation, like shooting the shit over dinner, like all that stuff is just normal people stuff. And I don't think Prometheus really had any of that.
It's just stiff.
It was just stiff and all like plot driven. Like, I almost wish all the plot was pushed into the background and you're just hanging out with people on this ship and just enjoying like their lives and their relationships and like drama between them, and let the horror grow like slowly in the background, like Alien.
I wonder if it's notes. Like, I wonder if it comes down to story notes. You have producers and all these, especially because they want these movies to do really well in international markets, which means the exposition has to be nailed. Yes. And all of the information has to be nailed all the time so that people kind of, so the idea is that they can follow the plot, where it's like, I'm with you. I'm like, fuck the plot.
Well, but they don't give the audience enough credit that like you can figure out the plot. The whole point of like enjoying a story is that you're unraveling something.
Yes.
You're, if you're unraveling it, you're engaged. But if you're being handed it, you're just sitting there like, all right, when's the next piece coming? You know? And I don't think Prometheus lets you unravel anything. It's just you're confused by decisions and then also confused by just generally what's happening.
It's like, what is it? I like the guy, the white painted man is very cool looking.
Yeah.
He was cool looking. And then I saw him at Comic-Con. I remember that a guy doing that at Comic-Con. And I was like, that's the best part of Prometheus right there. I like that guy.
Oh, yeah. Very striking imagery.
But also what I think is interesting about a movie like what you did with Psycho Goreman is that then there's the opposite, where what I like the thing I was responding to is the idea that the premise is right there at the top. It's like you kind of get the premise out of the way. It's like, boom, boom, done. We're in the movie.
Yeah. Oh, totally. And that to me is like just a symptom of me as a storyteller and also as like a movie watcher and content enjoyer, even though I hate using the term content, but like with video games and books and things like, I get bored super quick, and I like when a plot like takes a left turn every like half hour or so, or even less. It's very much like kind of a Rick and Morty logic, where I feel like those episodes, the structure of their episodes, it's like the first like 7 minutes is like an entire Futurama episode, and then the rest is pushing you beyond what you thought the plot could even like, sending you to places you didn't even think that plot could go. And so that's what I wanted to do with PG was like, all right, the first like 15, 20 minutes is like basically the thing that you expect to get out of that trailer. And then I wanted to like think beyond that and like, well, where is this? Where else could this go? Like what other kind of nonsense could happen with this scenario? And like really just get the most out of the premise.
It's really growing as a cult movie. And I think it's because of that. I think it's because no matter what, how many times you sell the movie, people are going to think, oh, it's just this thing. It's just going to be this thing. But it's genuinely surprising, like in the center of it.
I'm sad that I haven't watched in a theater with an audience that has not seen the movie, because there's a specific moment in the movie where PG is looking at a magazine and admiring some hunky boys.
Yes.
And that moment is such a like crazy turning point. It's like, if you're not, if that moment doesn't land for you, you're not going to like this movie.
Exactly.
But I love that people, it's like, I imagine people watching it and that happening and that like realization in their mind going, oh, that's what this movie is. Like, we're going to those kinds of places with this. Okay.
Yes. Yeah,
nuts. Like, it's like telling you straight up, like now the movie gets nuts. So settle in.
I kind of felt the same way. Mandy did that. Awesome. The same thing that the hinge on Cheddar Goblin, where all of a sudden you're like, what the fuck are we doing here? You know, like, that's what's cinema is still like, that's what I love about horror movies, man, is that they still have the opportunity to surprise the shit out of people.
Yeah. Well, and also just having the freedom to do that, is important. Like if this was a studio movie, like PG would have just been the first 20 minutes, you know,
sure.
Like they would have been like, no, stick to that premise and keep it real basic. But I was lucky in that, like my producer team, like Stuart, Jesse, Shannon, Pete, like just all these wonderful people surrounding me who were just like, just make the crazy thing you want to make and we'll deal with the rest.
How did you get and perceive notes on this movie? Because I do think as a dark sketch comedian, the character, like the dad, right? The idea of making him dark, like dark and kind of fucked up, and he kind of deals with it. He's kind of this ineffectual dad, which is like a studio normally is going to tell you that's got to go. Like they don't like it. They don't want the family to be too unique. You know what I mean?
They don't want the family to be weird. And yeah, they don't want him to have issues. But it's funny, especially with the dad, because it's like, I make him such a pathetic schlub, but then there's also so much reverence for him.
Yes. Yes.
Kind of just love his shitty life and the, like how delusional he is. I think being able to embrace characters like that is something you would not get with a studio, where with like the team making this film, it was like, we were all definitely on the same page about like the style of humor of this thing and embracing moments that make no sense but are funny in the moment. Like even the bit with like the chicken in the microwave was like that's totally grew just out of being on set and doing it, and just me being like, well, what if the chicken was like totally melted? Like I took a little hand torch and went in and like really cooked it, like melted the plastic and everything, because I was like, when we open this, I want it to look crazy.
Yeah, ridiculous.
But then doing the slow zoom in on Adam when he's saying you're welcome and him like starting to tear up was like just a thing that in the moment we're like, that's super weird, let's keep doing that. So it's just being able to find a moment when it's happening and just like grab onto it and be like, let's get all we can out of this, even if it's like kind of derailing what the scene is actually about. Because I don't know, I feel like that just makes stuff more memorable and interesting. Like I always go for weird. If you can accomplish weird and have your audience coming up being like, that movie was weird, like I think you've done a good job.
Absolutely. Well, you also, I think it also takes single-mindedness of vision behind the production team for it to work. Like you guys all found it funny and were in on the joke, and so was the cast. I think that when half the people aren't in on the joke who are making the film, that's when it starts to look messy. Because you see movies that are weird for weird's sake, and some of them are just not even successful even in that realm, because it's like there's something missing.
Well, you got to be sincere with it too. Like I hate like winking at the camera type stuff, like acting like your movie's like in on the joke. Like yes. I approach PG like very seriously, and like with all the actors was clear that like you're not hamming it up on this. Like this isn't like Scary Movie. Like
yeah,
this humor only works if you believe the characters and the situation. And so hammering that home was important, and making sure everybody embraced that and embraced the fact that like it's a dead serious scenario where absurd things are happening.
It's the truth. It's why it's weirdly grounded. It somehow works out, especially with the big, huge characters. How was it being on set with that much special effects and that many people in that much makeup and costumes?
I mean, there are definitely some rough days where I like would have a moment where I'm like, this was maybe a little too ambitious, which is funny because when I wrote it, I was like, this is like a pretty small movie. But I realized that I've said that on every movie, like on The Void, me and Jeremy were like, oh, this is like a pretty contained horror movie. And it ended up being this huge thing.
Oh yes.
Manborg is the same thing. Like everything. I don't know. I guess my idea of like what small actually is and like what's achievable with not a lot of money is totally unreasonable. But yeah, there were some days where it was like, there would be like, I don't know, like 8 creature suits playing at once. And it's just like so much shit being thrown at the camera. And I gotta give a shout out to my creature effects team. Like I had really, talented and generous people, come and help out and really, just kind of like pull everything together with very little time, very little money. And just basically for just the passion of making something this crazy.
It really hangs together. So what's next? Are you going to do, is this your drawing room Like, comedy is the next thing to do? Like, are you going to do something along the lines, you know, something subtle? Is it time for your Phantom Thread? A whole movie where, I remember I saw it in Brooklyn. It was just like, and people's going, like laughing like they're 1980s rich people. And I was like, yeah. I don't know what's happening.
Yeah, no, I don't think I'll ever make a movie like that. Like, I want to make movies that please my sensibilities. Mm-hmm. And I'm trying to make, my goal is to essentially make like a video store shelf of movies that I can then send back in time to Kid Steve.
Yes.
I mean, I will definitely dabble in like more serious stuff at some point.
Sure.
I'm all for it. I want to challenge myself.
Sega Gorman 2 is off the, is that off the radar there? You can't do that?
Oh, well, I'm trying to do something. Sega Gorman. There's going to be more stuff. That's all I can say right
we
now.
We just want more.
I know.
How do you feel about that? You have a bunch of people being like, I want the character that we loved and I want it again, but I want it the way I want it, sir.
I know. It's scary. I'm getting into that awful George Lucas territory of, now I've created this thing that everybody loves, but they also have projected ownership. their own kind of ideas of what that character is. And yes, ownership. So, I mean, PG will return in some form. And yes, my goal is to just make it come back in a way that's so crazy nobody expected it to go this way.
Yes.
That's the goal. Yes. So, yeah.
Phantom Thread.
Yeah, play dead serious.
It's just him, just full on. He is the effect, a suit designer in 1945. I don't know. Like, I don't even know what that movie, I don't even know when that movie took place.
I like the idea of me remaking Phantom Thread as a Psycho Gorman sequel, having never seen Phantom Thread.
No clue what it is.
And just kind of going off of a trailer and assumptions of what it would be. I think that's a great approach for a sequel.
Just need him to rip apart a woman. I just want to see one Paul Thomas Anderson movie where it's just like he goes full gore.
Where he just does full on gore?
Yeah, full gore.
I guess he's never, I mean, I haven't seen all of his movies, but to my knowledge, he's never really had gore. It's a lot of implied off-screen violence.
Yes, there's some light violence, but never like that. He's never done a full horror because I don't think that interests him. He's like a Robert Altman kind of guy.
Yeah, understandable. And in the same way that like his types of movies I would never attempt to make because I live in Sam Raimi, Don Coscarelli land where everything needs to be crazy. So
hey,
that's
man.
Fine. To each his own.
We love it. And to people like me, because I watch all of it, man. I watch every single horror movie that comes out.
The fact that we just talked about Things is pretty telling to me that you are aware of that movie at all.
I love it
a lot.
I get excited by horror. It's really cool to talk with. Because also the one thing too, I think that people respond to Psycho Gorman is I think it's what you. It's a bunch of people that like the movie who share the same like movie language and what they like, and they're just like, yes, somebody gets it.
There's just a very specific stream of movie that doesn't seem to exist anymore, that's kind of in those genres, like kind of bending genre rules, and I just want to keep making movies in that vein because I think we need them.
We need more stuff like that. We have to help stabilize this nation.
Yep. It's the only thing that'll do it is more Psycho Gorman.
That's it and that's the pressure that you now face. You got to bring him.
Lot.
You got to bring him back. It's a lot, and I'm letting you know. I'm increasing it. We need you.
Well, it's a heavy burden, but I carry it gladly.
He's crying. You can't see. Tears are actually streaming down
everywhere.
His face.
Yeah.
And I'm talking about him saving America, and he's Canada. Right? He's in your sea. You're stuck over there, but you got to come. We need you here.
I know. It's pretty generous of me to offer to save your entire country, but you know what? I'm going to do it.
That's what I need to hear. Finally, a guarantee. I am sick of all of these fucking whatever, man. Everybody's weak, man.
You're sick of empty promises, so I'm just going to promise I'm going to save your entire country right
yes,
now.
Yes, that's what I'm talking about, man. It's a very full promise. But I want to say thank you so much for talking to me, dude. You have been Stephen Kostanski. Do you have anything you want to plug? Do you want to talk about how Jeffrey Toobin's back?
Who?
The guy who, it doesn't matter, dude. It doesn't matter. Some piece of shit. The guy jerked off on the Zoom call. He got fired. He's back.
Why is he back?
Because he said, I'm sorry.
Oh, so you're we're in an age now where you can actually say you're sorry and come back?
No.
Oh.
No, he's not gonna last.
Okay.
I don't think. I think he's gonna come on Zoom again. There's no way he's not going to, because now he knows he can get away with it.
Well, he's coming back because he knows he can do better, I'm assuming. He's gonna put on a better show. And that's what we're waiting for.
It's just going to be full. I think that Jeffrey Toobin is going to do one of those things where he takes a pool stick and he just slowly inserts it up his butt on a call. And he's going to be like, I can take more. I can take more. You don't think I can? I work for CNN.
Just watch. You watch. It's going to come out my mouth.
This has been great, dude. I guess they could find you on social media if you want that.
Yeah, my Instagram @kill_Kostanski is that's like my work account where I post photos from all my movies and stuff. That's the best Sweet. Place to see what Pester I'm up you to right now.
And yeah. Ask him, where is your Psycho Gore Man? Tell him your ideas. He honestly, you're open to pitches, right?
Yeah. Send me all your pitches.
And scream at him if he doesn't get back to you.
Because I'm not busy at all, guys. I am just sitting and waiting.
You can't see him. He is in a bubble bath right now. He has a hairnet on. He's just kicking up his heels. That's what he told me before we got on the call. He says, I've been spawning it all day.
I'm just refreshing my email and I'm not seeing any scripts yet. So I guess I'll go to sleep unless somebody sends me a script.
That's what he does. That's all he does. He sleeps and then he makes it bleed as soon as they give him that fat stack of cash. Because I also know you're just in it for the big old money, man.
I'm just in it for the Benjamins, man. That's all I can say.
I know, bro. Thank you so much for listening to this Patreon interview. Thank you so much for giving us your money. Now give this man your money so that he can make more films. All right. So hail, sweet Satan. And thank you, Steve.